April 30th, 1982, Long Beach, California. Saul Alexander, interviewed by Kay Bigger.
And, she got real uptight with me because we weren't getting along well. Finally, I got the key to how to understand her, and we got along a lot. But that summer was pretty good. I worked one summer in a fish cannery, too, down in Long Beach Harbor. Don't remember which one. Did all kinds of work there, unloading boats, and the fish would come in during the night, or when I worked various jobs, working the retorts, fishing, turning into the retorts, and shoveling, supplying the cans down the chute for the girls to pack, and just the summer there. Then, I joined Dunaway. I was still in high school, and we had the first Dunaway chef in Long Beach, Southern California, and I don't know how I got hooked up with it. But anyway, I became active in Dunaway, and right at that time, I was waiting for a few short months for John O. Rankin, was the Cadillac dealer down on 6th and Long Beach Boulevard. And if I was ever a square peg in a round hole, that was one, because I had no competency for mechanical. But, I mean, especially cars and small things, I couldn't work with them. But I was just put the help around there, so there I was. But within Dunaway and active, and one of the members of the board called him a Percy Engmeyer. He was a member of the board, and he was a special agent for the Union Oil Company, and they asked me if I didn't want to go to work for the Union Oil Company. They had a job opening. They were looking for high school graduates. And I said, I sure do. I don't like the work I'm doing. And so he put me to work over in San Pedro in a warehouse there. Supply warehouse, sales department, selling merchandise. I have to remember one thing. I remember very vividly though at John O. Rankin, the only thing of any point at all I worked at, I was wiping cars out in the showroom there. I did everything, and I was in there one day, and there's always the floor men on the floor there. They had to spend their time throwing cars right on the floor out in the display room there. And it was a fair thing, and it was some overalls, and a little bit on the grubby side. Middle-aged man, I suppose he was. I don't know who he was. And he was going around the thing looking at the cars there, nobody pays any attention to him. They thought he was just one from the oil field, or a farmer boy, or, just a country bumpkin. And nobody paid any attention to him. And so finally, one of the fellows started going and talk to him anyway, have a little fun. And the man was admiring the cars, or looking at them, and all of the floor, I had half a dozen of them there, and he said, how would you like to own one of those? And he had no idea the man was ready to buy one. He didn't say he had a dime in his pocket. He said, well, he said, I remember, he said, I like that car, but if it was yellow, he said, I think I'd buy it. And the fellow said, well, wouldn't you be satisfied with any of these other colors? No, I want a yellow one. And he said, well, he said, how would you be able to pay for it? How would you like to pay for it? What's the cost? I think the cost in those days was about $3,000 or something like that. Well, he said, when we could deliver one. Oh, he said, we'll get one in a few days if you want a yellow one. And then he pulled a lot of money out of his pack. He had $1,000 in his pocket. He just, which goes to show, I mean, the indifference that a misjudgment people make in sales work, judging a man on his appearance, and he had the money in his pocket. I didn't guess it either. I probably might have taken the same attitude, but so I went to Fantasia and the warehouse, and then later drove trucks, and oh yeah, I drove an old white and a modern truck in Long Beach, had solid rubber tires, and had the crank it too, and in the wintertime on Southern Hill, it was an awful thing, because you couldn't, in the mud, you just spin your head, you couldn't get any traction, and you'd get stuck and have to be pulled out, and of course all the roads on Signal Hill were dirt roads, and some of the material was even being hauled on dray wagons, a few of them were still being passing wagons, and so I was just delivering merchandise around the hill to the oil fields. Used a lot of lubricating oil, steam cylinder oil to take there, because everything was steam. And then I was living at home and saving my money. I was going to LSFC the following year. And I earned enough money to pay for 1 year. And then going to try to work summers and keep it up, and my father died then in September of 23. That was it. Mm-hmm. I was going to enter that school, that fall term. So I had to go back out to work. When I went back to the union, I quit my job. I was about ready to go there. We're getting a job down in the harbor, bunking ships, working on a barge down there. Most days a tremendous amount of cargoes leaving Los Angeles Port, San Francisco, mostly Los Angeles, to all the world. We have a lot of oil in this country, and then cargo vessels. Mostly we were saving cargo vessels from all over the world, and they just had to be bunkered by barge, either at Outer Harbor or at some dock, or maybe we'd have to top off a small tanker or a Navy boat. Submarines will pump diesel into them, and some of the other vessels would have to top off their bunkers because they couldn't draw any more water. They were scraping the bottom of their heads throughout the anchorage and take the rest of the bunkers and go out there. And then the one accident we had out there at anchorage, the Mexican boats were coming up. We were selling bringing copper ore from Santa Rosa Lira down in Baja. It then was operated by a French company, and it was a pretty high sea there, and we rammed a hole in the side of this vessel. It happened to be a very very thin steel plate. There were ships that were made during World War I for, they call them the mystery ships. I hadn't even known about them myself before. Later on, subsequent to World War I, they sold them. The company got a hold of two of them for cargo use, and we ran the hole, and we were stuck inside the plate there. The bark was, the edge of the bark was stuck in there. It was just about 2 feet from dynamite. They loaded dynamite. They were bringing copper oil up and taking supplies back for the mine. And the guy got a chilly spine. So I worked at that about 3 years. And then I worked as a salesman for him in the field selling the merchandise I used to deliver. And that's a lot of few years.
What did Sicilia look like in the early days? Was it all like wooden barracks and...
Oh, pardon, Sicilia?
Yeah.
All wooden barracks.
And steam boilers and...
Huh?
Steam boilers and...
Oh, yeah, everything was steam. It wasn't so much later that it came out with spark plug engines, internal combustion engines. Yeah. Yeah, that's hard work. Wood building was the hardest work in the office. That was really the toughest work, and the toughest characters in the office were the wood builders.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why was it so tough?
Well, building a rig is hard work. You're having heavy merchandise. You have to be strong and tough to climb and endure the kind of labor you're working under. And you have to know how to use a hatchet and a hammer and drive those big nails into that 4x4, 2x4, 4x4, all kinds of big heavy timbers. And I had to climb up. And a good crew would build one of them today. 136-foot derrick. Yeah.
How many men
in a crew? I think so. I think there was about half a dozen. I don't remember clearly, but I think it was 5 to 6 men with a foreman and we had two, and they were the generally the meanest and the toughest guys in the office. One of them, I can't call his name now, he turned out to be a South Pole heavyweight fighter when he wasn't doing those. He never was a contract, he just worked for other people. He used to fight over Kid Mexico and the CPO Club and the Wilmington Bowl over there in Wilmington. I remember going over many times seeing him and Kid Mexico fight. One week he'd knock out Kid Mexico and the next week Kid Mexico would knock him out. It was a real draw when they got together.
What's the CPO Club?
Cipriotti Club. That was over in San Pedro. I went there and had one in Wilmington. And then back there, I had one up at Berman. That was in the four-round days when they only allowed four-round boxing. I'm amateur. It wasn't professional. But they got paid by substitutes, I'm sure. They were going to go back and then pay them for money later. Later on, they did pass a new law in California, allowed professional 4-6, 10-round, 12-round fights. But well, they're rugged citizens. Yeah.
Kid Mexico was a real fighter then.
Oh, yeah. You heard of him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. He was a tough hombre. He later was promoting down here in Silver Spring Hill. You probably know all about that.
No, I don't know all about it, but I heard about him
as being
involved in politics in Signal Hill.
Yeah, he was trying to get gambling and card clubs down there. I think he had some for a while. I think they allowed poker there for a while. Down on Orange Avenue, about, somewhere below Burnett, there were some clubs there. I remember they were trying to get attention and promotion, and he had, what was the actor's name that played Copper on Cassidy?
Oh, yeah.
The Cowboy Hero. He was in down there one day with his horse. Not sure, but a beautiful horse. What was his surname? I don't even remember. And just the promotion purposes. No, I would, huh?
You were talking about rig builders. Did they get paid more because of
rig? Yeah, that was high paying labor. I don't know exactly what they made, but most day drillers made about $12 a day. That's next about $9. And a rig builder probably made around $15 a day or so. When I left the union, how long? I worked there 4 or 5 years or so. I came over here in 26. About a year after gasoline was introduced to the West Coast here. Promoting cuts out the lead sales, and Union Oil Company, Associated Oil Company, had the first franchise on the coast set for exclusive to, I don't know, a year and a half or something. So
what's the significance of that?
Huh?
What's important about cuts out
the lead? Well, it was the first ingredient that they used for improving the octane of internal combustion engines. About that time in the late 20s, they were beginning to build high compression cars. And the ordinary white gasoline were refined in naphtha and casing had been blended to make a finished gasoline for the public. You got that knock, that pre-ignition knock. A real horrible knock in your car if you have a high compression. Among the early high compression cars was the old Essex. Never heard of it, but I know we used to, when we went out to demonstrate to prospective dealers for our Ethel, we would try to get an Essex car to demonstrate it. And I'd take them over to Signal Hill and show them the difference in the performance. But there was a marked difference. Well, the reason was, that was the most efficient ingredient then to raise the octane of the material, lower octane gasoline, the higher octane, to prevent that pre-ignition knock. First year or so, the only complaints we had about it was, piston valves. So they added another real ingredient, known as hollow wax oil. In those days, by that time, it was lead as such, and ethylene dibromide and hollow wax oil were added later, and that eliminated the valve pitting. And even today, if we didn't have environmentalists to stop it, because the amount of cubic centimeters they're using a gallon of gasoline is not that harmful. The carbon dioxide is more harmful than what affects that much percentage of lead would have on atmospheric conditions. And of course, when it first came out, well, Mom let her hire our team, and I know they even had trouble today with five owls, and that's how I fell in the blood additive had eliminated that trouble. The most efficient way is to raise out pentobastin, because it takes more barrels of crude anyway to make the high octane without additives. It's a waste, higher consumption of crude oil. Anyway, that's argumentative, but and then let's see, Union Oil Company, the depression came, or a crash came, and I got fired. I've been the last one hired as a sheriff, and I wasn't very popular because of several things, and among them, I remember Union Oil was quite an oppressor those days of labor, and they had an auditor, as most companies do, come down and check these substations or sewer stations. And after he got through his audit that year, he said, he wanted to see me, and I said, okay, what do you want? And he said, well, he said, come here, I want to talk to you privately. And he said, however, he says, we're just waiting for Union Oil Company here and making a very limited salary. He says, we don't understand how you can afford to build a house. Well, I had been married by that time, and prior to that I had bought some lost out in poverty flats out here, $3 down, $3 a week payments from Solomon Spaulding, who subdivided the tract out there. And I bought mine from Mr. Spaulding out there. And I paid them off after we got married. I finally paid them off. And we'd been married about 2.5 years before we built a house out there. The one that's on the wall there. And they were a very small five-room house. And it's only about 750 square feet in it. Till later we built a room up in the, it was quite a steep roof path, and we built a large dormitory upstairs there, and our sleeping quarters up there, so it was then maybe about 1,000 feet at the most. Anyway, he was questioning my capacity for doing it. He was inferring that somehow I was stealing from Union Oil Company. Well, of course, I got real uptight. I couldn't stand with murdering him. He got pretty tough about it, pretty pointed in his statements. And so I didn't have a good reputation with her. So I guess I was on the list, and I was the last one hired anyway. So they let me go, and So I started the One Man Oil Company. They called me later, the One Man Oil Company. There were a lot of shoveling jobs that I wasn't going to do that. So I bought I raised the money to buy a little Model T truck, Model A, the Ford truck, flatbed truck. And I went out and rescued a lot of business that I had had for Union, that I wrestled for Union in the office. Of course, the demand was way down, but it was enough that I got a commissioned agency with Sinclair Oil Company, who was seeking lubricant affairs out in the West Coast here, and made contact somehow with them, and got a commissioned agency out of them, and I survived a couple of 3 years there of depression. They used to call me the one-man oil company because I'd have my business suit on and go out and solicit business. I dress up even with a tie and street suit on. I'd get orders and I'd come back and get my coveralls on and deliver it. So that we survived and about that time, then a couple of 3 years later, there was a new company being organized and formed, Bachman Oil Company. And there was an oil glut then, and they were producers. They were independent producers. He was in his family of German and came over there, had money to invest, and they'd gotten into the drilling and producing business, and had gathered together quite a few wells on Signal Hill and Sanford Springs and over in Venice, and later drilled some more, and they were going to have to go into the refining business in order to have a market for their oil. So they bought out a little refining company right on 29th, all between Gardena and Walnut, I think it was. It's a 1 acre piece of land and a little refining on it in order to sell their crude. They got that little refining. It wasn't capable of running it at $2,000 a day. But they had about $1,500 a day of their own oil. But they were also going in the sales business. They had a sales department trying gasoline, and they wanted a line of lubricants and greases and byproducts like that for the service stations. And so I knew the fellows that were operating the company for these people, and one of them said, "I'd join." I told him, and said, "Well, we need a man like you right now. Why don't you come to work for us?" I was selling them a little stuff and so I decided I'd do that. So we built a warehouse, I got the office there, and got a line of merchandise and supplied the sales department with the products for it. But along about the same time, about a year or so later, they didn't have quite enough crude to run capacity there, so they wanted to know how they could find any crude oil from. Well, I said, "I think they can," because I knew that everybody around the hill and producers, and so I also began to buy the crude oil and contract the crew off for them to supplement their supply. Later they built a larger plant over right across from Hancock on Anapol and 28th, and they were running 5,000 barrels a day. That was the capacity. So then I had to spend more time on widespread purchases to the, all around the L.A. Basin here instead of the Signal Hill. Huntington Beach, Sanford Springs, Athens, Earth, Cranes, Plant, Signal Hill. And so I've been doing that as much as I was running the supply into the sales department there. In other words, I had to wear two or three hats. Then, the smaller things like that, they had these ups and downs, and the main problem was moving fuel oil, because those primary plants, about 65% to 70% of the barrel of crude turned out to be residual fuel oil, and if we didn't move that, we couldn't have gasoline, diesel, and crude each or so, and so that had to move, and there were critical periods and surpluses of that, and there was real competition. So finally, the president of the company came one day and said, Sal said he's got to have more help on moving these byproducts. He said, can you move off of what you're doing now and help us out? Well, I said, well, I do what I can. So I started out looking for a dentist and led me down to cross the border in Baja, California, where I thought there ought to be some business, which there was. And so I got the same feel out around there, all around Southern California, all kinds of places. Anything to keep it moving.